Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and we're about to remember the life of Amir Baraka, who passed away last week at 79. Not many of us knew he was as sick as he was. Many people would want to revile him, dismiss him out of hand as an angry man, as an anti-Semite, as a Marxist, as a communist, as many things. But that, and also to crown him as infallible in the world of Africana, is also to, I think, in many ways, do this incredible artist, mind, human being a disservice. His work, his plays, his poetry transformed America. We didn't even realize that it transformed it. Painful, powerful. One thing he never did, he never left the people. He lived in Newark, New Jersey, and dedicated his life to the poorest among us, fighting for revolutionary change in America, and never stopped doing that. So we are here with Dr. Jelani Cobb, Associate Professor of History and Director of the Institute of African American Studies at the University of Connecticut in Storrs, Connecticut, author of The Substance of Hope, Barack Obama and the Paradox of Progress, To the Break of Dawn, A Freestyle on the Hip-Hop Aesthetic, and The Devil and Dave Chappelle and Other Essays. He has a forthcoming book, Antidote to Revolution, African American Anti-Communism and the Struggle for Civil Rights. Dr. Kamozi Woodward is with us, Professor of History at Sarah Lawrence College, author of A Nation Within a Nation, Amir Baraka and Black Power Politics, editor of the Black Power Movement, Part 1, Amir Baraka, From Black Arts to Black Radicalism, Freedom North, Groundwork, and Bashi Rose, who helps direct the program Direct Responses Alleviate Misdirected Aggression program Drama, which works with young people in school and incarcerated adults with theater and film to deal with conflict resolution and more. He's co-founder of Nomo Theater and one of our area's leading artists. So good to have the three of you with us.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. You can also tweet us at Mark Steiner, but let us know. 410-319-8888 to join us here. So let me begin, if I might, starting with Dr. Woodward and then coming over to Bashi Rose, who's directed many of his plays and appeared in his plays. I think that we when you look at the obituaries of Amir Baraka, we don't get the sense of who this man was from the moment he published Blues People to his play The Dutchman to his becoming a Muslim and becoming a revolutionary and changing his name and continuing to write poetry and books. And the influence he had, I think, on the American artistic, literary world and social conscience of this country goes beyond what we know on the surface. Dr. Woodward?
Yes, sir. You're correct. Unfortunately, the political attacks on Baraka, even when he was alive, tried to criminally neglect the fact that he was a great artist. He was one of the geniuses, not only of the black art movement, but in American letters generally. And so I think that's part of the repair work we have to do.
Yeah, that reminds me of when a production of The Dutchman was staged at the Cherry Hill Theater a few years ago. And
Cherry Hill, Maryland, Cherry Hill, New Jersey?
No, Cherry Hill Theater in Manhattan, New York.
Which Cherry Hill we're talking about.
Right. Cherry Hill Theater, Manhattan,
right,
New York.
Right.
And it was directed by Bill Duke. But what was interesting was I had read a review of the play by Stanley Crouch, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
He totally dismissed the play. He dismissed it when it was initially produced, that it had no literary or theatric credibility, and that Baraka was, if you will, no more than a rabble rouser. But I agree with the gentleman that he's an important contributor to American letters. Not only was he, a fiery activist and political activist, but he had the sincere sentiment of a poet, a radical poet. And for me, the way I was introduced to Amir Baraka, it was like a shot of artistic and cultural dope in my veins, because this is an individual I was never introduced to in school, in any of my formal education coming up as a young man. So someone like Amir Baraka, he just opened my eyes. He introduced me not only to black power politics, if you will, he introduced me to Theater of the Absurd, Samuel Beckett, as well as the more the revolutionary-minded W.E.B. Du Bois. He, you know, other writers constantly talked about the W.E.B. Du Bois who came up with the Talented Tenth, and he emphasized the revolutionary W.E.B. Du Bois.
And Jelani Cobb is now with us. Jelani, welcome. Good to have you with us again.
Thank you.
I'll just let you chime in here. We're trying as we kind of reflect on the complexity of Mary Baraka.
I mean, it's very difficult to summarize, you know, his complexity. One of the things that, you know, I think people overlook, you know, when talking about Baraka is that, you know, he was a first-rate intellectual.
Yes.
And he was one of the most widely knowledgeable people who I ever met. And, you know, he was conversant on, you know, the black tradition musically, literarily, you know, certainly poetically and in theater. But he had a breadth of knowledge that allowed him to place that tradition in the context of other traditions of people of color, other traditions of people of the world, other traditions of people who had been exploited and oppressed. And, you know, what he achieved in his work, you know, especially, you know, kind of the later work, the third stage of his career maybe, was this absolute democracy of language. And so when you read his work, you know, some of it is phonetic, some of it is conjugated or not conjugated in the language of, you know, a person you might meet on the street corner in Newark. Some of it is from high-blown literary theory. Some of it is from Marx and Marxism. And, you know, he was able to pull all these things from all these different places and create this synthesis that was, you know, profound and beautiful.
I think that was, you know, he can be so easily dismissed by many as either anti-Semitic. He got, and that's a much too simplistic way of looking at him. You know, I was thinking about this. I had this conversation. It was a wonderful piece actually written by a man in a left-wing Jewish newspaper called the Forwards about Amir Baraka, and his piece really grabbed me because he was talking to the world about who this human being was in terms of his fight for social justice, a man who, like, never left the community. He could have been a millionaire. He could have been he could have sold out and made millions of dollars. He refused. I mean, he stayed in Newark with his theater, his work. And was that you, Jelani, trying to say something? I'm sorry.
Yeah. The thing is, if you'd ever been to his house in the South Ward in Newark, which I've gone to many times over the years. I think the first time I went there, I was 19 years old.
Mm.
You know, his house, the same day was his home, doesn't really explain it because it was partly a theater, partly a community center, partly a political office. You could, at any point in time, you know, walk into that house and, you know, Nina Simone might be there, or James Baldwin, you know, would be there, or it was sort of this running showcase. And, you know, for the many times that I was there, there was literally an open door. Like, people would be, you know, from the community, people who were aspiring artists, people who were political activists, people who were just in town and needed some place to stay. And it was always busy. I don't think I've ever seen that house empty. And he was so central a part of Newark, you know, because of that. And he explained it also. His grandfather had come from South Carolina to New Jersey. And so the Barakas, you know, the Joneses before that, you know, it was originally named Leroy Jones, had been in Newark since the 1920s. And they were part of this long black tradition of black folk coming north. And so there's so many different ways that you can understand who Baraka was and what he accomplished.
Can I say something about the money?
Go ahead, Kamosi, please.
Years ago, when he got a check from speaking for $5,000, as I stood there, he gave it to the secretary of the organization. He said to Salimu, please pay my phone bill this time before you spend all the money on the organization's bill. All of his money, because I think Amina, his wife, was jumping on him the fact that he was giving all the money away and they weren't even paying the phone bill. Okay? So, you know, he made a great deal of money, but he gave it all, I mean literally all, I mean, he got me my first job after I graduated from college. So that's the kind of person he was. He was widely published, but he made sure that he published other artists. If you look at that anthology, Black Fire, he's introducing a whole generation of young poets to the world, and that was part of his mission. He edited one of the first volumes on black women's poetry. So his job, I think, was to open the door for a whole generation of voices that were different than his, from his.
And Bashi,
artistically, I would say that his main contribution, I think, is poetic insight. He is comparable to, for black Americans, what Goethe was for Germany, to give it its language.
Yeah, it was his words. You know, I was thinking about that the other day, about how he wrote and what he said, and the way he put it, and it was, you know, he was a deep intellectual who could tell us what was going on in society, but he did it almost like he was channeling the unconscious of the human spirit, in the way he told the story, who we were, creating theater out of poetry. His words were all like that to me.
Yeah, they're also like bullets from a machine gun as well.
That too.
I remember the first time, you know, reading The Dutchman and The Slave, you know, and I had never come across a play, you know, where, you know, he's talking about the possible ending of America, the Armageddon in America, and a conversation being held during that. And for a young man, you know, to read something like that, it totally changed my worldview on things. He, through poetry, through literature, made me more critical of so-called American democracy. At the same time, bringing me more in tune, you know, with my African lineage. So I think he embodied a whole plethora of black thought and world thought.
So this is a very tough question to ask. Well, let me ask you all these questions. I'll start with you, Dr. Jelani Cobb, before we go to Dr. Kamoji Woodward and back to Bashi. What do you think were his most profound works in terms of how they affected who we are?
In the tradition, when I go back to Baraka, and I mean this one, it's a sprawling body of work.
Yes, it is.
He was an active writer for nearly 60 years. And so it's hard to sum all that up. But if I had to simply take one poem, it would be that poem In the Tradition, because, you know, what he does is put together the entire lineage of what black people have been and who black people have been artistically and creatively in this country, and says that, you know, this is what we are forged from. And this is what we go back to. And, you know, he has these great puns and plays on words in there. And he says, you know, things like, what is this tradition based upon? You know, and he talks about, you know, H-Rap and H-Box. He's talking about H-Rap Brown and Henry Box Brown, the abolitionist. You know, and so if you didn't know anything about Baraka, you could read that poem In the Tradition and get an understanding of who he was, and not only who he was, but where he fit in the social and artistic trajectory of black people in this country.
Dr. Woodward?
Yes, I think one of the things that Baraka was doing, similar to Malcolm X, is to try to get black people to see themselves, to see the genius in their lineage. And so that poem, In the Tradition, I think that's the right one, evokes all the different voices of the ancestors, and it's trying to tell you, you know, he was a vessel to try to put you in touch with your own heritage. And I think that's
right.
What he wanted us to, you know. And sometimes he would evoke the presence of a ghost, and he would go into the future and see your children and come back and say, look, groovy ancestors, I see how hard it is for you to be black in these primitive times, but we're from the future. You are going to win. And the world is beautiful because of your victory. So he was, you know, there's a lot going on there.
Bashi Rose.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And also, as a theater artist, Slave Ship, and actually being able to read it, study it, and actually perform it. I think it's I would say, in a sense, a rite of passage for an actor or actress of African descent. In that short pageantry, he chronicles, you know, the capturing of Africans from the transatlantic slave trade all the way through civil rights movement, Black Power movement, and using mostly physicality and imagery in the piece. So it forced us as actors to not only read the words, to live the words, and to live that history. And I felt like that plays a very pivotal and spiritual role in our existence. Yeah.
You know, one of the things, this is, now we don't have much time left in this segment, but we do want to come back, and I would love to do a very special program on Amari Baraka and a longer piece, because I think it deserves that, to really explore all his power and contradictions, what he represented and meant. But he was also, this is something you don't, he was also, everything I've read about him, everybody I've talked to who knew him and his children, all of his children, all four of them, he was a dedicated father to his older children, with his first wife, Hetty, who was Jewish, to De Palma's kid, to Tamina's kid. And one of his children now, Ross, is a councilman in Newark. I mean, he also was that, you know, and people always described his home, Jelani Cobb, as a place of huge warmth and intellectual and artistic power, no matter where he was.
Yeah, I think, I think that's also like Baraka took that with him. And, you know, it was so interesting to see, you know, his trajectory. But, you know, one of the things that I also wanted to touch upon, if I could for a minute, was, you know, the way that he has been assessed in, you know, some of the obituaries, which have, in the mainstream media, have focused on kind of adjectives like controversial and polarizing, and, you know, words along those lines, which is, I mean, maybe technically true, but it, you know, really misses the point, you know, of what his body of work was. And I think a lot of that stems from the poem "Somebody Blew Up America," which, you know, and people scoring him as anti-Semitic. But it's, the interesting thing about that poem is that, you know, the poem is in itself a conspiratorial view of history, and in it, you know, he goes back through the vast litany of inhumanity that people have been subjected to, and, you know, everything from the assassinations of Walter Rodney and the imprisonment of Nelson Mandela, to the exploitation of the Irish, to the colonialism of the New World and the subjugation of the Native American population. He really his entire lineage, but he includes prominently, he says in that poem, you know, who put Jews in the oven? Like, each kind of who is the reference point asks this question. Each line is a rhetorical question. It says, who put Jews in the ovens and who okayed the yellow stars? And it was like, who killed the most Jews? Who killed the most Italians? Who killed the most Irish? And it goes through this entire kind of spectrum of human suffering. And so to summarize the poem as anti-Semitic is really kind of greatly reducing what he was talking about in that poem.
No, I think you're right, and one of the things, just some of the piece you talk. This poem, I wrestled with this from the moment he wrote it, it's very powerful. I mean, let me just read a little piece of it. Then we'll take a break and come back, hear some of his voice, and conclude our conversation before we move on to Haiti. They say it's some terrorist, some barbaric Arab in Afghanistan. Who is the biggest terrorist? Who changed the Bible? Who killed the most people? Who do the most evil? Who don't worry about survival? Who have the colonies, who stole the most land, who rule the world, who say they good but only do evil. And as you said, in every line he asks the question, who? And the controversial part was when he wrote, who knew the World Trade Center was going to get bombed? Who told 4,000 Israeli workers at the Twin Towers to stay home that day? Why did Sharon stay away? Who? That was the part I had. That particular verse is what I had the most problem with. The rest of the poem I loved, because I thought it was powerful. We'll come back and pick up on that note and hear his own voice as we continue our homage to the great Amiri Baraka. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're here with Dr. Jelani Cobb, Associate Professor of History and Director of the Institute for African-American Studies at the University of Connecticut in Storrs, Connecticut. Dr. Kamozi Woodward, professor of history at Sarah Lawrence College, Basha Rose, director of drama who works with young people and our inmates, people who are incarcerated in our community with film and theater, founder of Nomo Theater, 410-319-8888. Let's hear a very quick clip of Amir Baraka's words. Just get a feel for his voice and come back to some thoughts from our guests.
The poem, I guess, that reflects living in Newark, but I guess living in any ghetto. It's called Dope. Ray light morning fire lynch yet. Yes, the pain in dreams comes again. Race pain, people are people are people everywhere. Yeah, ooh, 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 yeah, ooh, 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 yeah. Our people, yes, people, every people, most people, ooh, 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 yeah, ooh, 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 most people in pain. Yes, the pain and pain today. Oh, wow, oh, wow, it must be the devil. Oh, wow, oh, wow, it must be the devil. It must be the devil. It must be the devil. Oh, wow, oh, wow, yeah, devil, yeah.
I don't have time to play a lot, but we'll do that another day and we'll hear even more of his voice and his words, because one of the things that, Jelani, that strikes me every time I would be somewhere listening to Amir Baraka was the kind of theatrical, poetic essence of everything he said and did. It was the intellect meeting the body and the soul. He was amazing to watch.
Yeah, it really was. And, you know, the other thing about it, is, I mean, there's so many different aspects of him that you could talk about, is that he has three distinct bodies of work. And, you know, he has the body of work that he created during the Beat Movement. He has the body of work that he created during the Black Nationalist period. And he has the body of work that he created in the kind of last stage of his career, which was as a third world Marxist. And then, in addition to that, we kind of engaged him as a poet and playwright, but he was also an essayist and also
right.
A really significant music critic, because, you know, I wrote Seven on hip-hop and the blues. I've never listened in hip-hop and the blues. And the first thing that I did in kind of figuring out how I wanted to approach my book was go back to Baraka's Blues People, which is, you know, the foundational book on the relationship between the blues and the social trajectory of Black people in America. And that was published in 1950. It's still relevant. And still, and very importantly, it is still being taught in classrooms in this country.
And a closing thought here, because we have to move on to a section on Haiti, and I apologize for that, but I do want to, we will come back to this. Dr. Kamozi Woodward and then Basha Rose, and if we can get this quick call in, we will. Kamozi?
Yeah, he was the Paul Robeson of our time. That's what I would say in terms of Baraka. Renaissance man.
I would say he was our gifted fiery spirit caller, and his spirit's still going to live.
And Dr. Lester Spence, I see you've called in. Lester, we only have like a minute on this, but please, your final thought.
Yeah, I know. I want to emphasize a point that Kamozi Woodard made in his book, Nation Within a Nation. With Baraka, you have there isn't anybody more important in the Black Power movement, and he was one of the last people to really bring together art and politics. You don't have Newark's first Black mayor without his political organizing, and that's something that we do well to think about moving forward.
Well, we'll come back to this, and maybe we can develop a forum here at on campus to kind of really reflect on Baraka and Amir Baraka and hear his voice and talk about what he meant and bring some interesting people in who think about him in many different ways. And it's been a long time since I directed or performed in one of his pieces, but Vosh, it would be great for us to do that together here, would it not?
Do it.
We should do that.
Let's do it.
I'm ready. I am ready. Dr. Jelani Cobb, Dr. Kamozi Woodward, my dear friend Basha Rose, and Lester Spence, thanks for calling. And thank you all so much for these reflections on this very important person in our world. And we'll come back to this another day for a longer term.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we will journey to see what Haiti is like 4 years after. Stay with us.